And Colin, I know you've had a very busy day as it's moving day for you, and everyone loves a good moving day. I'm surprised Connor and I didn't get the offer to come help you move for a pizza and a beer.
Boy, that's how you know if I like you, is if I don't ask you to help move. I'm ready to drop dead here. I've been going on minimal sleep here for the last couple of days, so I'm looking forward to getting it over with and just going back to the hard life of racing here. Three races in just over 24 hours this weekend out in Quebec.
Well, I love it. We'll get to that in a minute. We've got a bunch of texts coming in here. I want to get to this one right away.
Okay.
Question for you from Whitehorse, actually. Hey, Struds, I have a question for Colin. When I first started watching Indy, there was multiple chassis manufacturers, multiple engines, and two tire companies. Now it's one for the chassis, one tire, and two engines. Can you please ask Colin, does he ever think they will go back to how it used to be, and which one do you prefer, Colin? Thanks a lot.
Well, I mean, that's an awesome question, and thanks for listening up in Whitehorse. That's awesome. I got some family up there. But yeah, as far as the multi-engine, multi-chassis, multi-tire goes, that's when that goes back to Champ Car. And, you know, when there was that level of competition or, you know, between engine, chassis, and tire, the costs were crazy expensive. Now the cars went the fastest they've ever gone in the kart days, with those, you know, when the Pano chassis came out, it was like unbeatable. Mercedes had a really strong engine back then. But again, the costs were crazy. I don't think that IndyCar is going to go back to that. And even, you know, if you take a look and kind of cross the border over to Formula One, what they're trying to do is unify more of those components so that you can have, you know, more of a standard chassis, standard bodywork. There's the, you know, starting next year in Formula One, there's only minimal things that the teams are going to be able to do with power plants, with the chassis. And again, it's all designed to curb costs. It'll be interesting to see. The intention, of course, in Formula One is to level the playing field, to have these cars be less aerodynamically sensitive, so that when, you know, if you're legitimately faster than another car right now, when you follow behind, you lose over half of your downforce, which makes it very, very difficult to overtake. You know, again, starting next year, that's supposed to be a little bit better, but, you know, time will tell. But no, I don't think we're going to get back to that. Even, you know, NASCAR with their next gen car that's coming out next year, it's standard chassis that are being made by one company. You know, there are only going to be minor differences between the cars. So I think we're going to be stuck in this mold for a long, long time.
A lot of text coming in, Colin, so we got to answer the people from Bronco Nick. Can you please ask Colin, how does a wet track affect grip on a track with large elevation change like at Spa, SPA?
At Spa, well, that's this weekend's race. You know, it makes it slippery. That's kind of a simple answer. What's kind of fun is it's really impossible for anyone to appreciate what an IndyCar Formula One driver, you know, anyone who races in the rain races, what it actually feels like in the car. Like I'm fortunate enough to be able to strap my helmet on, you know, pretty much weekly and get my go-kart, which is a real kick in the backside. It doesn't really compare to what, you know, the big cars do, especially for overall speed and overall G-force. The exception is when I watch in-car camera of an open wheel car, whether it's IndyCar or Formula One, I can tell with almost 100% certainty, I can feel exactly what those guys feel like, because racing a go-kart in the rain is very, very, very similar to racing an open wheel car in the rain. You can, you know, we all know what it's like to drive in the winter. Winter is nothing compared to what it's like to race in the rain. You are so close to disaster every moment. You can actually lose traction on straightaways if you hit a puddle. You are perpetually trying to regain control of a cart that all or a car that all it wants to do is spin out of control. And realistically, this, like, that's when the car and the money means nothing. These are when the best drivers move to the front. These are the guys that have the best control. These are the guys that can react the fastest. In the rain is when you really see who the best drivers are.
Let's stick with the F1, as joined by Colin Liveson for the Racing Report. Lewis Hamilton has an 8-point lead over Verstappen with a dozen or so races left. Is that enough for him, or does he have to continue to build on that and pull away that Max has the ability to make that 8 points up quickly?
Oh, no, definitely not enough. For all intents and purposes, these guys are tied. It's going to, the next couple of races, like we mentioned this weekend, F1 returns from the summer break. It's been 4 weeks without racing. This is a scheduled thing. This is the way the schedule is normally set up. But they race in Belgium. Belgium, borders Holland, so it's going to be a very, very pro-Max crowd there. And then next weekend, they go back to Zandvoort, which is the track in Holland, the Netherlands. So F1 used to race there a long time ago. It's been off the calendar for quite some time. They were supposed to be back on the schedule last year, but obviously COVID changed all that. It's going to be a mega fight. If nothing else, the next two races will definitely have some positive momentum from the fans for Max. But what we saw the last couple of races when, Mercedes, introduced their aero kit and their new improvements, it seems like they regained, the advantage, but it's just going to be a dogfight here the rest of the year.
Tom Collinston for the Cantorque Racing Report. Colin, last week we discussed the challenges for the Pinty's racers with a very tough stretch, three races this week and really difficult. Which one will be the toughest for the racers to handle? Is it the first, second, or third race, and which course?
That's a very, very difficult question to answer. On Saturday, we go back to ICAR on the former Mirabel Airport. That's a road course. If you're not a good road racer, or if your car is off by a little bit, like right now, I know you love when I mention GP3R, so we'll throw one more plug back there to those guys. But what we saw last race was that the margins between, the top five guys were, lap by lap only separated by a tenth here, two tenths there, and it would go back and forth throughout the entire run. This weekend, it's going to be equally tight. Andrew Ranger had a bunch of mechanical issues, so he wasn't really in the fight. But between, Alex, the Dumoulins, Kevin Lacroix, and Andrew Ranger, that's 99.7% to where your winner is going to come from. Everybody else is going to be, kind of an also-ran or hanging on. The brutal part is, again, we go from ICAR, which is essentially the outskirts of Montreal, have to travel overnight 3.5 hours to Chaudière, and then do the back-to-back ovals. The oval gets broken into two races of 150 laps. Again, if your car's just a whisker off, you're not going to be in contention. So there's going to be a number of mindsets. The guys who are a little bit further back in the points, they're probably going to be a little bit more aggressive. If right now Alex is 1 point out of the lead behind Raphael Lessard. Lessard has not lost on an oval yet, and he got his first win at Chaudière a couple of years ago in his one and only Pinty series until this year. It's going to be a dogfight there again. Not to belabor the point, but if you've got an issue in race one that damages your car, you're going to be fighting for the, you're not going to be in contention for the final because there's only like 45 minutes between the races. For me personally, I didn't really look at the schedule before I booked my flight. So we're going to be, like I said, 3.5 hours outside of Montreal. We're not going to be able to leave the track until 11, 12 o'clock at night. Probably about 11 o'clock at night, which won't get us back to Montreal until almost 2 a.m. And I'm wheels up at 8 a.m. on Monday morning. So, I'll apologize in advance to anyone that interacts with me because I am not going to be a happy person when I get back here.
Well, Colin, a busy stretch and a move. Good luck to you all. We can't wait to hear how it goes when you get back to us next Thursday.
Thank goodness for my unofficial sponsor, coffee.